This episode of the Hall of Justice is brought to you by Fume, the number one natural way to quit smoking. If you know anything about me, you know how anti-smoking I am. My parents smoked for so many years, and I hate to say it, they are still smoking. And I'm getting this for them. There's a new product called Fume, F-U-M. It's the number one natural way to quit smoking. It takes the benefits of super plants, behavioral science, and beautiful design to make quitting smoking a little easier. It's a wooden handcrafted inhaler, a hand-to-mouth replacement, plant-packed cores studied to curb cravings and taste and smell great. It's no smoke, no vape, no nicotine, and no harmful chemicals. Here on Sports with Friends, we have a discount for you. Just go to this website and type in our code. Our code is SWF, Sports with Friends. Go to the website www.breathefume.com. Fume is F-U-M. Breathefume.com/SWF. So if you use that code, you save 10% on your order today. I received it, and all I thought about were my parents. If you are a smoker, you need this. If you know a smoker, you can help them out. This is a great gift idea. There's over a dozen unique flavors, so you fill out an online quiz and find out what cores are best for you. Takes 30 seconds. Go to breathefume.com, shop Breathe Fume, F-U-M, and save 10% with the code SWF for Sports with Friends. Fume, the number one natural way to do what I've been begging my parents to do, quit smoking. Now stay tuned for the Hall of Justice.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great Hall of Justice.
Superheroes have to be around other superheroes. You know what I mean? That's the Hall of Justice is more about them just commiserating about their powers and less about them, like, actually fighting crime.
Seth Everett is the best there is at what he does, bub. And what he does is the Hall of Justice podcast.
Go, go, go with a smile.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Hall of Justice. This is episode 252. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate the ratings, the reviews, the whole thing. That's how iTunes markets podcasts. And we thank you for listening to this one. If you've listened to the Hall of Justice over the years, you know my affinity for voice actors. I challenge anyone in the broadcast media industry, find a voice actor who's an ass. Find me one. It's never happened. And when you talk to these people, you want to know everything about them, because not only the iconic roles that they have played, but just the stories of their careers are truly, truly fascinating. And today's guest here on the Hall of Justice is second to none. Fred Tatasciore has been everything. He's been in Star Wars. He's been in Marvel. He's been in DC. He was in The Long Halloween. He's in Injustice. He's in Mortal Kombat. He was the Hulk. He's done it all. And he's done a bunch of things that our genre doesn't even pay attention to, but you know, yet they pay in American dollars. So it's pretty cool for him. Fred Tatasciore, thank you so much for doing this. So nice to meet you, sir.
Seth, it's wonderful to meet you. Thanks for making the time.
You know, one of the things that I wanted to start with is when you're in genre things that people are super passionate about, mm-hmm. Not only do they scrutinize every word that comes out of your mouth, but they care about the writing and the animation has to look a certain way and everything is just so. And that wasn't always the case. I wanted to get into your mind in when you start to get either the reward of the job well done or some of the criticisms? And do you pay attention to any of that? Because you voice characters multiple times. You were the Hulk, for example, on six different shows. Mm-hmm. And did you see the feedback from the first three times to apply to the next three times?
Oh, very good question. And yes.
They go down from here, by the way.
No, that was a great question. We'll stick on this then. For the next 3 hours, I'm going to answer this question because I could. First of all, I like to say I don't pay attention to criticisms and all that. I sure do. I listen to everything. The big job you have as a voice actor is, you know, you have to bring life to this character and a reality to the piece. You have to breathe life into this and make it real. And so I'm always really interested in serving the project, serving what are you trying to do with this Hulk, for example. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of, I'll use Hulk as an example, because I've been in those green feet for a long time, and I've had to play many iterations of the Hulk.
Right.
So there's, for example, the Savage Hulk, the original stuff I was doing, where he's really no more than a weapon, you know, and despite, you know, against Banner.
And sometimes didn't say words.
No, in fact.
It was just grunts.
Grunts and yells.
Yeah.
And I think the only line I really did say was, Betty, you know, right? So there is.
Yeah, people are pausing that part of the podcast. They're going to make that their ringtones. Just continue.
Betty. I hope so. So there will be that response, and people will be. You'll see responses to that, and then it'll go into, let's say, use Earth's Mightiest Heroes, and that was one of the most popular iterations of Hulk, where he's now part of a team. He's sort of reluctant, but he's still part of the team, right? And then as he evolves, he's going into, you know, Avenger world, where he's actually now a teammate and technically a superhero. And then you'll see some people respond to that in different ways, and they really like it. Hulk and the Agents of S.M.A.S.H. was a big thing I did, and that was a real experiment for Hulk, where he's talking. And he's
a
Zen Hulk, I call him. He's over it, and he's trying to help other Hulks get through their their stuff. He and Banner kind of are in cahoots. They sort of fused at that point.
Right.
And you'll have reactions. You'll have some people say, that is the greatest Hulk. We love that Hulk. Everyone has their own version of what they like. And then you have some people who are like, I there is a video of a guy somewhere. It's so funny. He's like, what now, the Hulk's friendly? The Hulk don't kill people. You know, he's like, why would you, you know, was he nice now? You know, some people have responses to that. And they might be responding to the actual project itself, saying maybe I reject the notion of what this is supposed to be.
And that was with Clancy Brown, right? You were with,
yes.
He was Red Hulk.
Oh, man. The greatest. I love that man. And that Red Hulk he played was just, that Ross was amazing. And I had so much fun. This is when we actually could record together. So he and I had so much fun recording. That whole cast had a great time. Really was I loved that show. I loved working on that show. But again, that's another example. That's another iteration of Hulk. And some people really picked up on it. And others were like, no, I want the beast. I want the guy who's going to get mad and throw things, you know. And then Avengers then kind of kept it more into the comic book, you know, into like the traditional. He has a life of his own.
Well, and don't forget that's coming out at the same time that the live action movies are coming out.
Yes, so they coincided there, so that had to hook up in some way. But I loved what they did. I loved that show because I loved the team that he was on. And you find out more about him and his he has a very neat room. He's very clean. He's trying to have order in his life. And it's something that Lou Ferrigno and I completely agreed on because we do a lot of, you know, we've done some panels together. Hulk wants to just be left alone. You know, he really does want to help the dispossessed, but he really doesn't want to be necessarily, being a complete force for destruction. Doesn't mind wailing on bad guys. You know, and if you're truly innocent, I mean, it's so going back to, I'm giving you a long form answer here, but
well, this is why this podcast can't be
short. You're going to get a response. Sometimes it's like every time there's a new James Bond, there's a resistance. You know, the new actor, oh, he's not gonna, you know, it happens sometimes. I played StarCraft, I played a character named Zeratul, and Jack Richel originally played it. Mm. And this is the kind of thing, he was brilliant as this alien, wise alien creature. And sadly, he passed away, and I ended up voicing for him after that.
Oh, I see.
But people were not in the know, they were writing like, why'd they get this new guy? You know, da 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 da. And like, I remember, like, before BlizzCon, all this stuff came out, and I felt bad. I was like, I'm sorry. They just needed someone. You know, like, you're just like, but everybody, you know, you see people jump on their sacred things that mean so much. So I want to serve that. I don't mean you have to pander, but it means everything to me if a fan likes that version. I have to say. I'm not above, I don't do the whole, like, I don't care what you think, I'm doing this for me. I really do, because I'm a fan too. So I want to serve that Hulk, that Darth Vader, that whatever, these iconic characters, Yosemite Sam or Solomon Grundy or whatever. You want to make sure you are, especially when they're iconic like that, you really want to serve that. And if you're lucky, you get to add another dimension to it. Like for me, for Hulk, I tried to add a little more of a quiet thing, like a little bit more of a sullen, like more like, oh man, you know, like
it's amazing how you can flip that on a dime.
Well, thank you, man. But yeah, there's a quiet version. There's a part of Hulk that's not all about that, you know. And I enjoyed that. I enjoy bringing any kind of humanity, even to bad guys or to whoever, you know, because no one.
Yeah.
What can you bring to it that would make it more complicated? Or more interest, not more interesting, but just an added element that you're allowed. And that's the writers, by the way. I mean, that's when your writers and directors and, you know, animators are coming together saying, here, we have this idea. Can you flush it through? And you hope that, especially the fans, you hope people, two things. You hope that the existing fans like what's happening and you put more onto it for them, and then the other side is you hope you get new people who are interested.
Right.
You know, for like Hulk and the Agents of Smash, what was interesting is there were a lot of people who weren't into Hulk originally or the Hulks, and then saw that and was like, hey, that's kind of an interesting.
Or they think of Bill Bixby, and they, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they know something, and you know that's part of the ever evolving because you know sometimes it's evolution, but sometimes it's change for change's sake.
Yeah, that's
right. And so that there's always that mix of, you know, is this different because it's better? And that's
right.
Always the massive, massive question. In your career, I don't like to do those, you know, these times of your life. You know, when you were 15, what was it like? Like, I just always think there's something vanilla. When did you realize this was what you wanted to do? Not when did you get discovered. That we see. When did you realize this was something that you thought you could do?
This has been kind of an ongoing thing for my whole life, is I've always been fascinated with voices and characters, acting, and so I didn't just sort of decide one day or I fell into it. When I was younger, I absconded with my father's, they had a tape recorder. Back in the day, we had this thing that was a ribbon of tape that you could record on.
Listen.
And
this show, if you're old enough to know what the Hall of Justice, you know what a tape recorder is.
Okay, because I was about to say, we took care of that Kaiser, I'll tell you what for, back in...
Tell me how baseball was better when Mickey Mantle played.
Okay, so we're all there. Okay, there we are. I would say I was always into it. I didn't know that that was going to be necessarily my life. Hmm. Like, I didn't know that was going to be... I got into doing voices and impressions from a very young age, and then... always putting on little shows, and then I love to make recordings, and then I was into doing stand-up comedy. I did stand-up, which was very voice-driven, and also
cool.
I studied animation. So I was an animation student, both theater and animation at UCLA, and I started doing voices for not only my own films, but for other students, and it was so great to be a theater guy doing Shakespeare and studying that stuff and doing animation. It was like two parts of the same coin. And as a voice actor, I'm really glad I learned about animation and know what animators are going through. All right. And so this was just kind of a slow, Seth, it's like a slow progression for me doing this. I kind of just was like, I was always pushing in this direction, but I didn't quite grok or think that, like, oh, this is what your life, this is what you're going to do for a living, you know? No, I wasn't aware how much that could be a job, you know?
that's pretty incredible. And now with streaming services, it seems like there's an abundance of content.
The content is off the chain right now. I mean, it's great content, like, because you don't have to worry about so many demographics.
Right. Yep.
And, you know, there's not the studios aren't just turning things down left and right, where you can live your life in development in a movie. You could just go forever trying to develop a movie and never get made.
You're doing Looney Tunes. That's new. Star Trek Lower Decks. That's new. I mean, these are things that have come out in the last 18 months.
And if you told me I'd be working on Star Trek and Looney Tunes, oh my gosh, you know, and it just was really, really been amazing. The scripts, the level of comedy or whatever they're bringing to it, or even adult work and kids shows too, you know, Ask the Story Bots and Bubble Guppies. There's so many things that are like, people are really pushing for great content and quick. I can't believe the turnover either, you know, because I worked on Family Guy. You know, certain shows, it's like they work so hard on that and they get reshoots and, you know, it takes a while for things to get out. Some of these things are getting knocked out on Netflix like quick and good quality, too.
Back with more of the Hall of Justice. But first, a word from our friends at Warner Brothers. Batwoman, the complete second season, arrives on Blu-ray and DVD on September 21st from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment. This is the season we've talked about a bunch. Javicia Leslie, who has been on the Hall of Justice, stars as Batwoman. At the end of the first season, remember, Dougray Scott's Commander Kane declared war on Batwoman, and then season two kicks off and suddenly Kate Kane is missing. Then you meet Ryan Wilder, who becomes the new Batwoman. How that story unfolds and everything that goes with it, including some major twists at the end, is the second season of Batwoman. The Blu-ray includes never-before-seen bonus content, including deleted scenes and a gag reel. Batwoman, the complete second season, is also available to own on digital and has been streaming on HBO Max since July 27th. Check out Batwoman, the complete second season, wherever you get your home video.
Well, it's pretty, it's amazing how it just seems like you have to pay attention because there's always new things coming. And, you know, all the streaming services, and I was an early adapter to cord cutting and getting rid of cable. And it's what you become is a better television watcher because you have lists and you have a plan. So when you sit down on your couch, you say, okay, this is when I'm watching Ted Lasso, and this is when I watch Batman The Long Halloween. And you're like, you can see those types of things just with the click of a button. You know, from a sports perspective, I laugh because people are like, well, what channel's the game on? I go, I don't know. It's on Hulu. What's the difference? It doesn't matter. I don't care what it's on. It doesn't make a difference anymore because that's the old way of thinking of the remote and the flipping channels. And now, you know, there was this golden era in the 90s where a little bit before you started your active voice acting, but, you know, Batman, the animated series and Justice League and Superman and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then there was this dip where people wondered, it seems like things now are very targeted. And hear me out. It seems like those shows, so something like Batman, the animated series, you could be 7, 17, 27, 37, and still dig it.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is now these shows are targeting a specific audience. And especially, for example, some of the DC Universe, the direct-to-video stuff, like that is for adults. That is not for kids. And then you have some of the Marvel stuff where you're doing the Marvel Spider-Man, and that's only gearing towards kids, and older people don't relate to it. And it seems like, much like everything else in our society, it's fractured. And now it just seems like animation is very, very specific, where it used to be much broader.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. I've found that to be true most recently. It reminds me of going back to just reading books. Here, this is a book for your age. This is a book for kids. This is book for, it's much, and you plan. Right. To get into a book. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, so I'm going to read this thing now. I'm in a mood and it's I got to read it with this kind of vigor because this is the kind of thing it is. And
well, usually there's an assignment coming with it and it's from a teacher. But yes.
Right. There's that, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
There's that. But what I mean is that then now you're saying, OK, I'm going to binge watch this. I'm either going to choose to binge watch it because I can't stop. Like, I'll do that, like, when Barry was on. I just had to watch all of them, you know, just because I couldn't believe where this was going. And there are some others where you're like, no, I want to wait each week. You know, it's exciting. I want to be excited each week, you know, and you it's make hard. That choice.
Yeah, it's hard. It's Sometimes gonna be... it's hard. Ted Lasso has been one where I kind of wish I could see them all in, like, a week.
I understand. I've heard that, and I have a feeling that's how I might end up doing it. But every one of my friends, including you, have said you've got to watch this. It's like okay, and I love.
I'd like to know what friends of yours that sound like that, but
I don't know. I just made that up. 7-year-old kid. It's very interesting how I wonder what kids are gonna be like later on in life. For example,
well, they'll
right
all
now
be wearing
it's
masks.
All a click of a button. You can see anything you want. I went back to regular television. I have a toddler, and it was really funny. We were watching regular cable television, and there were commercials. And he's like, what happened?
What is this?
No, go back to the thing. I'm like, oh, this is an ad. This is how this thing gets paid for. You know, I'm trying to, dad-splain everything, you know. And he's like, no. You know, where's the thing? And, you know, he's used to being able to rewind it, turn it on, move it on. You know, it's very funny. I wonder what that's going to manifest in 20 years. People are just going to be like,
you know, but looking at some of your more recent roles, you know, some of this stuff is what we traditionally in the media call the reboot. You know, you did the revamp of Young Justice, for example.
Right.
You were Deathstroke. And then there was Animaniacs, and we had Rob Paulsen and Jess Harnell on the podcast.
My favorite.
But you know, like, you never in your wildest dreams, if I had told you 10 years ago, hey, they're going to redo new episodes of Animaniacs, you'd have called BS on me in a second.
I would be surprised, or I wouldn't know that they did it as well as they did. I know they were so good, but they've really done it so well. Like, the reboot is phenomenal. It's so funny.
It's very funny.
Ugh, and I pinch myself working with Pinky and the Brain. These guys are my friends, by the way.
Yeah.
Outside of it.
Well, but I can tell you're all assholes, so you can tell.
I know. Yes. Yeah, screw fuck
real
those
Real hard
guys.
To understand how you could possibly be friends.
It's almost comical to be able to say fuck those guys. You know, you know, just to be like, you know, it's like the nicest person you know. You know, it's the we'll actually do that. We're like, yeah, Mo, whatever, you know, and I have to pinch myself going, I can't believe I'm in here with this, doing this. You told me the reboot and how good the reboot is. That's the thing.
We talked about this on the podcast a lot. What you can tell in nowadays, you can tell when stuff is made by fans.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell that Jon Favreau is pinching himself to do The Mandalorian. He's literally like, you can see it, which
it's
is why
passion.
I think there is a green light, especially on a podcast like this, where we do our homework and we watch these things when a property is out there that doesn't live up to that.
Mm-hmm.
It is incredibly crushing. And I'll use an example, the Suicide Squad movie. The Suicide Squad movie has this character, Starro, who may be one of the greatest comic book characters ever created.
Okay.
And they made him like the marshmallow guy in Ghostbusters. You know, like you didn't have it. And so when you see that and you know that, The guys who remade Animaniacs, or the people who are Greg Weisman, who's doing Young Justice.
Yes.
They care so much.
Greg
and you
Weisman.
Can tell when
cares.
They care.
Yeah. he cares about, Lower Decks, Star Trek, all by it's
example.
A nod to the fans. Mike McMahon is such a diehard fan that he couldn't believe that I'm not speaking out of school. I just had a
sure.
podcast with him now, is that he can't believe that it went through. We're going to do Star Trek, but it's going to be funny. And it's a cartoon. When I auditioned for it, I thought, oh, this is a spoof, right? You're not really doing this. Like, I really didn't. I didn't think that this was going to, like, I honest to God, I was like, oh, this is not really Star Trek, right? Oh, it is? Oh, my God. And it's then when you see it, it's a legitimate Star Trek show. It's just kind of on the lower end, lower depths, you know, decks.
Sure.
Not lowbrow humor, but just it's the team that has to find out where all the bathrooms are and the restaurants and,
it's hysterical, and it's just a unique concept. And what it does is it doesn't matter if you're a Picard or a Kirk. Or
right.
a new Kirk, you know, the Chris Pine Kirk. Like, it
Absolutely.
Doesn't matter. That fits, because either way, there's an Enterprise and there would be these characters. Like,
absolutely.
It just fits. It's hysterical.
Blown away. Yeah. And like you say, the reboots, too. You mentioned, you know, some of these DC shows, you know, they're dark. They are.
Yeah.
They're definitely made by the fans and by people who love the comic books. And, yeah, I was very, very, very pleased to be, or even Mortal Kombat being remade. You know, who
yeah,
thought?
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. Mortal Kombat and, you know, what it targets, I got a chance to see a screener of it, and what it targets is you don't have to be into the video game to dig that film. You can totally get sucked in. I do recommend, for Mortal Kombat Legends, Battle of the Realms, my one recommendation is don't watch it on a phone.
Yeah.
Watch it on a big, as big a screen as you can get your hands on, because it is gorgeous.
You know, that's so funny you say that, because I accidentally did that too. For example, it was sent to me early.
You're
and
right.
I was traveling around and I was like,
right.
I'm going to watch this. I have to watch it. You know
of
what
course,
I mean?
Of course, of course.
And I'm excited to see it, but I don't have anything. And I'm watching, I'm like, yeah, that's really great. And then I have to bring it to a big screen.
Totally.
Just do. And the sound... Oh. And boy, does it pull you in right away. And again, had to pinch myself for being Shao Kahn, you know, like finding out what is his deal and
yeah.
what makes him so, what it makes him tick, you know, other
totally.
Than just the video game or whatever. And I'm very curious to know how people feel about it. And, you know, just if because I really enjoyed the movie. I was impressed with the depth that they took it and the detail.
You're in something that at the time of our recording isn't out yet. First of all, you've done dozens of things that are not out yet.
Oh, yeah.
I say this to all our listeners every time. If you're listening to this when it's released, Injustice is not out yet. If you're listening to this in the future, you've already seen Injustice, and do us a favor, let us know how the flying car is. And how we get out of COVID. Just do us that favor if you're listening, because you never know when people consume podcasts. But Injustice is not out yet at the time of this recording, but you are Captain Atom?
Yeah. Yeah, and another one. What a cool character. And
oh,
I without revealing too much, but I'll just say this, is that it always is a very strange thing for me, and maybe it's coming from a divorced family, when Batman and Superman are at odds. You know, you have to fight Superman.
But for a better reason than they don't realize that their moms have the same first name.
Right? Isn't that interesting? All right.
Sorry, had to go there. They take
right?
my superhero card out if I don't.
Come on, man. That was good. That was that. You're going the deep cuts. but I, yeah. So Captain Atom is going along, working with the Pentagon here. I don't want to give up too much, but he is all about the rules and trying to make it all come together and work. And
you know,
he's yeah, and he's got a he's siding he's I again this is not a big news item, but he's siding with Batman, and it's just it's very interesting. I enjoyed that whole process and seeing that.
Spoiler: yeah. We got to change the whole description for the podcast now. He just gave us a little scoop.
I know. Got to be careful. Oh, and then the Halloween with Solomon Grundy. That again.
Yes.
Here's an example of rebooting a character that I've played many times in many iterations. Sometimes when we're going for the kids shows, like you mentioned, he's funny. He's scary.
For example, you did DC Superhero Girls.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the one. Yeah.
For some reason in Marvel I'm a good guy, and often in DC I play the bad guys a lot. But Solomon Cyrus Gold. All right, Solomon Grundy is a very unfortunate character.
Yes.
There are many different ways you can play this. I still want to see a movie just about him. He. In this particular reboot or whatever, there's got to be a human side. There's got to be a sad side where he and Batman kind of have, I won't say a friendship, but an understanding. And I think that's pretty cool. And I'd never seen that played out as well. And I was very glad to say, like, okay, here we are. We're taking, and he's more like a Groot. Well, not like Groot, but saying the poem over and over again. Solomon Grundy, born on a Monday. But each time that line means something else.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's kind of his I am Groot moment.
That skill is so, I'm sorry, I don't get over that. That is a skill that is incredible.
Isn't that fun to like, I had a character I had to play in a show by, oh God, it was called, my character's name was Moderna 83, and he only said doy. He was a modern artist, and so doy had to mean 100 different, Ludlum play, and it was bourgeois avant-garde. Yeah, right. And this guy, so that was, and I've had to play Groot. I've had to do a few of these where it is really funny where one sound or one word has to be, you have to fill in your content. A lot of times with creatures, you have to do that. I play a lot of creatures, and I can't talk about them at the moment, but like dinosaur type characters, and well, I can talk about the dinosaur, but like Devil Dinosaur, for example, you know, he's going to be roaring, but each roar has to have a content of like, what
do you mean?
That's
in the Hulu show, Marvel's Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur.
So for example, you know, Moon Girl, what are you doing? You know, like you have to think of that shape of like, what's the question? Still be a T-Rex, right? But
and you're
not
doing that from home?
Yes.
Wow.
Just in here in this room. I always knew I'd live in a padded room. I didn't know it'd be by choice. No. Yeah.
Do you get out and like exhale when you get out?
I do. Oh, by the way, going outside is very important.
I completely hear you.
Yeah, you can't. You know, you live this life, right? I bet you going out with animals or kids or whatever, you know?
Yeah, whenever I go out of my house, I love it.
Uh-huh.
And one thing I've noticed when we've had this conversation is your eyes light up whenever we talk about other people in animation. There is quite a fraternity of this group, and you are all at the top of your sport. So this is like the equivalent of like Tom Brady, Joe Montana, Peyton Manning, all hanging out together and just being the best of friends. Like, where did this camaraderie amongst you guys? Because you all do different things on the side, but every one of you has this voice acting in common.
Yeah, you know, it's a very interesting, it's an incredible community. You mentioned the like all your sports figures or even like your favorite bandsmen. It's like we get to be these session players.
Right.
And as John DiMaggio points out, we're all, one day he'll be playing harmonica and I'm drums and then he's bass and then I'm guitar. And, you become a utility player and we all have to do different things. We all work together. Yes, we are in competition, but there's never been rarely any time where let's just say I'm doing something and Kevin Michael Richardson gets it and I listen to it and I go, yeah, Yeah, he got that right. You know, so it's like, it's not, it's never, I think when I came into it, I'm sort of like the middle wave that sort of came by. There were some guys who, you know, really were early on, and you'd be amazed at how welcoming people were. Even if they knew there was competition or this new guy, they were all, everyone wanted a jam. Everyone wanted to play. They just want to play. They want, because if you do well, I do well. We all do well. If we keep upping each other's game.
But in defense, tell me if you disagree. That is easier said to people who have the resume that you have built. Because of what you have accomplished, you have that self-assuredness that you know that there'll be another job. So if you don't get job X, you know that Y or Z will come.
You know what?
If you are the person who is getting few and far between, you don't have that self-assuredness.
No, and I didn't. I started. We all begin somewhere. And I was trying to break in. I always joke, I had to yell my way in. I got into this business doing comedy and music and, you know, and creatures and things like that. But really, they had that covered. You know, by the time I got here, they needed someone who needed to yell their ass off.
But there was a time when Frank Welker did all of that.
Yes. And by the way, still, greatest thing about Frank is he ain't stopping. Like, he's as good, if not better, than he's ever been. That's, I mean, crazy. Like, his only stopping is if he chooses to not kill himself. He's one of the great things about this particular instrument and this kind of job is that if you're lucky and you keep your health and you didn't, you know, blow yourself out.
Smoke it away, right?
Or smoke it away, sure.
Yeah.
You can really do it for a long time. And Frank Welker's a great example of not only a human being and like a good person and so much fun to work with, but he's constantly working on it and changing and growing. And, you know, so there's not like a, you know, there's no like, oh yeah, he was so great. No, he's still like killing it, you know, out there.
Oh yeah,
and that is fun for all of us. Guys like D. Baker and I look at him and go like, okay, you know, you got one Frank or the two of us, whatever you want.
It's crazy. But,
yeah, so that those, I know ageism exists. It definitely does everywhere. But if you're good, sometimes that can. I know someone can argue this point with me, but you can stay in if you keep evolving and changing. I mean, they're always looking for new folks, and that's great too, because that's how I got started. And they needed people in video games to yell and scream and be creatures. And there was a period of time where I was like, God, I could not bust the nut of just like certain things of acting. And you know, it got to the point where I had to remind people, I go, you know, I do speaking roles too. You know, because they would be like, you get pigeon in a good way. And this is something D. Baker and I talk about all the time. In a good way, it's great to be pigeonholed, because you're like, hey, you're the guy that does that. Like, even in Wikipedia and all this, they're like, well, he does all the big voices. Like, no, not always. There are other people who do, and I do other stuff too. But people like you to have that one dream, you know, like that, like, this is what you are. And they do that because it's easy. And they want to make sure that, like, and so as an actor, either it's worse than on camera, is as an actor, you're pleased. You're like, wow, I love being that. I'm the guy they go to for this thing. But as an artist, you often say like, well, you know what? Let me try. Have you heard me do this, or have you heard me try to do this other thing? People don't know what you do. Because, you know, that's a problem in voice acting, too, is a lot of times, you know, you are kept anonymous. And I used to think that was a really great thing, you know, because you could have a life. But in some ways, it's actually very hard, because then people really don't understand. Like, you're starting over each time. And, you know, you look at my resume, that's from years of plowing, you know, and doing this.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
I never know. When it's going to dry up, or because we audition for everything, almost everything, you know.
You go on, what would you say, 10 auditions a week?
Oh, more than that. Yeah, really? Like at least 3 a day. Yeah, 50. Yeah, God, so about 10. Yeah, sure, maybe more. Wow. 3 or 4 a day. Yeah. And it's good.
And so
though.
Are you batting? I mean, we don't have to get specific. Are you batting 300?
something like that.
But 300, you fail seven out of 10 times. You are not getting the gig.
No, you don't, though. You don't get the gig a lot.
Although, by the way, you go to the Hall of Fame that way.
Yeah, yes. I'll tell you why. Sometimes, like today, I auditioned for something. It was a voice match. I was like, you know, I don't have it, that particular voice match, meaning I have to sound like, I'm sure people know what I'm talking about. But maybe if they're going to do a different type for the character, they might like it. So you submit it. But you know full well that maybe I'm not quite right for this part, but you try.
Right.
And then there are other parts where you're like, oh my God, this is so me. I'm going to put everything into this that I, you know, you try to put everything into everything anyway. You know, but
sure.
There are times where you really connect to something, whether it's a look or a sound or a, or the story behind the character. And you just go, I get this guy. I want to do this. So you do. You strike out a lot. You do, but it's more akin to fishing. You're going to just fish. Cast a wide
analogy.
Net.
Yeah.
No, it really is. I always joke with my wife. I say, I'm going fishing because it's like I'm just fishing 5, 6, 7 things a day. One gets through, maybe.
Maybe.
You know, maybe you get a call back. But like my dad would always say, you got to buy a ticket, right?
You got to be in it to win it. That's the motto.
I had a teacher in college, Tom Worth, who used to say, we love to audition. You know, I would do that. I'll sing that song just to make myself laugh. But you do. You use that as a time because you're in auditioning, you're trying to solve their problem. You're trying to solve something for someone. So my goal is to go, hey, what do you need? How can I apply this? What can I bring to this for you? Because they want you, more often than not, they want you to get the job because they want to find somebody.
Right. They know that you're credible and that you'll do the professional job. You have that reputation.
Thank you. That's
We've talked to Andrea Romano on this podcast. Colette Sunderman's been on this podcast.
I love them.
Like they know what they're looking for. And they just want to, at the end of the day, they want the quality to be high, but they'd like to finish, you know?
Yeah, they want to finish. They also want to know that you're directable. That's the other thing. A lot of actors, a lot of new guys come in. They think, oh, I'm a voice actor. Or you come in with like, this is what I think this character is. And you do it. And you do it really well. And they're like, yeah, but he's not that guy. So you have to be able to kind of be like putty, like clay, and be also malleable enough to be like, oh, okay, maybe I got to lighten up the voice. Or, oh, he's funny. Oh, I didn't get the tone of the show. I didn't know we were going cinema, you know?
You know where that was apparent recently in the Masters of the Universe revelation.
Okay.
Because Susan Eisenberg, who's a dear friend, came on the show and said when she got the role, you know, she's older than I am. And so she's not a He-Man person. And she watched the old footage and tried to emulate her voice. And Kevin Smith told her, you are Wonder Woman. Like, do that. What are you doing?
I know.
And he told that to everybody. So Merman doesn't sound like Merman. It sounds like Kevin Conroy. Yeah. And Randor doesn't sound like Randor. It sounds like Diedrich Bader. You know what I'm saying? And it's just funny how like that was a choice. That's a directorial choice that Kevin made. But boy, did it get scrutinized on the internet because you want Merman to sound like he has water in his mouth. And it sounds like the Dark Knight. Like it sounds like, and it's not a criticism of the voice actor. And that's why it's weird when you're doing a review of something like that, you'd rather talk to the writer because you can question choices that were made, but for the voice actor, you're following instructions.
Yeah, you are. You bring in what you can to the table. And like you said, you know, she went for what she studied and thought this is proper. And it is. And Kevin Smith, who's brilliant, you know, has his own, he really is. But he had a very specific take on this. I mean, it's a very adult, very funny, irreverent, like we're exploring, they're exploring things, you know. I mean, I'm doing the other, the He-Man, you know, and and that's awesome. And that's exploring a whole other aspect, two reboots.
Sure.
Here's an example we were talking about earlier about reboots. I'm Randor in that one.
And, you're a Randor in the new one, this new CGI one. Yeah.
Right. And it's funny because Dietrich's one of my dear friends, and it's like we're too, but like
another gem of a human being.
Another gem of
people
a human
listening
being.
To this podcast are like, I know, I get it. They're nice enough.
Yeah, I know, we get it already. You know, fuck those guys. No, but it is true. I kind of feel silly when we do it, but it's all how we feel. They had a very specific, you know, the Kevin Smith one had a really strong, like, okay, we're going to explore some avenues we never get to explore in this.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
This reboot.
That was wild.
So that's kind of what made it. That's what makes that great.
Yep.
You know, but
oh no,
it's really interesting.
Yeah.
But you're going to get slapback of, you know, if
social media was ugly. Right.
I mean, look, Rob Paulson probably talked to you about how many times Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were like,
yeah,
no, not the new one. No. Oh, we love the new one. Oh my God, this is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. You're doing another one? No. No. Okay, that's really good too. Like, you're constantly reinventing this.
Well, it's like, can anybody be Optimus Prime but Peter Cullen?
Right.
It's the same. It's the same logic, and you fight that battle.
I know you do.
Okay.
And, yes, sir.
Two quick topics before we I could have you on literally forever.
I would.
You'd
love
like to be the permanent co-host of this show.
I would do that in a heartbeat, brother.
There you go. because I also have to ask you about What If. I have to ask you about Hitmonkey.
No.
There's so much. Make,
you know what? If you want to do it, I'm happy to do a part two sometime if you want.
All right, part two's coming. Well, how about this? When Hitmonkey gets released,
Let's do it.
You referenced earlier this idea that you loved being in the same room
and that there
was something about it. And there is a time, and this wasn't COVID.
No.
There was a time that it stopped, that everyone records at their own time in their own place. And I don't know that productions are suffering because I couldn't tell you, but what is the motivation? Why is it easier to do 7 recording sessions versus just one?
It's actually not easier. The problem is I'm not, no, this is not, like you say, this is pre-COVID. What started to happen was that they really, first of all, let's explain, the group dynamic is great because, and even if we do it in Zoom, it's great. You can do group records in Zoom and all that. It's because acting,
right?
Because
everybody's recording locally, so it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah,
the quality.
In fact, it's kind
matter.
Of better in some ways. Acting is reacting, and so when you have a read, I have a way I can respond. If Roger Craig Smith throws this joke at me or does
another service, veteran of the Hall of Justice,
yep. I'm gonna love that guy. But like, he's a nice guy too, by the way. No,
of course he is.
Jerk. He's a total jerk, Roger. the thing is that he let's just say I know his read. I hear him, and he can have a response to me. And acting, you're both alive in the scene.
Right.
The thing about voice acting is it's a real theater of the mind. You have to create the world for yourself and be in it. And you don't have, which I love doing film and theater, you have a set, you have props, you have, you know, things that put you in that world. You know, your immediate costume, you're in that world immediately, and you have a lot to be reminded of that. And where if you're sitting in a dark room, you know, you're creating this. And so when you have your fellow performer being in it with you, it reaffirms that illusion, that thing that you're living out. Now, I think one of the reasons for the singular records were schedules. People started hiring very, very high-end celebrities, and not to say that.
Well, and there are some voice actors that get offended by that because they want voice people to do voice work.
I know, and the thing is my feeling has always been: if you have an acting card, if you have a SAG card, you should be allowed to do anything, and it is the bane of our existence.
But they're hiring them because they get to say Justin Hartley in Injustice.
Yes, there is the star.
Nothing against Justin Hartley, hopefully
no,
future guest
by
on
the way,
show, has nothing to do with that. It's just the idea that there are guys who are hired, you know, do you hire Rosario Dawson, not Susan Eisenberg, because you can say Rosario Dawson is Wonder Woman.
Yeah, we've got a choice. We got a character. We got John Goodman or Fred Tescori. and you know, and here's the
great
thing.
Reference.
I'm a huge John Goodman fan. Okay. And so, you know, I'll hire, guess what? I'm hiring John Goodman. So the thing is, And it's not because oh, I got to meet him. It's because he's freaking good, right? He's good.
You'd be a great Fred Flintstone, by the way.
Hey, yeah. No, he's great at what he does. I'm using him as an example. You know, he's really good at what he does. He's a great actor. Now, here's the thing that killed us is that is not the problem. I mean, and it is the bane of our existence. A lot of times in film, you do hit that, I call it the glass wall. I've gone as far as, like, you know, I play incidentals and all this stuff, but for me to actually do what I'm qualified to do and play, like, a major role in a film or, you know, it's totally hard. You're up against that. That's because Hollywood recognizes film and TV because that's Hollywood. New York is Broadway, okay, right. And theater. And in Japan, voice actors are celebrated. You go to Tokyo, they're actually getting trained to be on-camera actors. The same way voice on-camera people are becoming here. So what I don't have a complaint about hiring a very famous, you wrote a part for John Cleese. Of course you should hire John Cleese. Right. You know, like, come on. But the thing is what I don't like, and I really wish we had a different way of looking at it, is they've decided to keep the voice actor, like, we don't know about them. You know, you're usually
like a secret
the second
society.
Class.
Yeah.
You are not. Here's the good news. The good news is you can actually work all the time. Okay. So you're good. The good news is it's a fantastic job. Yeah. As an artist, it's frustrating because you are always up against the whole, like, well, we got to hire these guys because it's this. And it's like, how about just hire the right the best voice for you?
Right.
And the thing is that studios. Also, your job, your film will get made if you hire that famous person, because not only are they good, okay, because they are good, but also your film will get made. Yeah. Well, who did you get? You know, and it's like the sad part is what they don't realize is that people, your marquee value would change if people knew. Like, I would go to see a Maurice LaMarche movie. Who, you know, right. I would go right. see a Rob Paulsen movie.
Right.
Like, you know, because just the name enough would be for me to go. But see, America hasn't got there yet. They haven't gotten to the point of, like, oh, this is an actual art form and that people are really good at this. You know, I would go see that Billy West show. You know, I would, you know, that's how I feel about it.
All right. So now we're talking about getting cast in different projects, and there was something.
By the way, I'm so sorry. Can I just make an edit for you?
Yes.
Just saying, the reason why, but going back to the singular thing, is just that people's schedules and touring schedules and music schedules and theater schedules and film schedules became so much that they really had to get
too hard. Right.
Actors where they can.
I totally understand. We went on this tangent, and you open up a can of worms because there was something we covered a lot on the podcast.
Yes.
Which was the decisions by various actors to give up roles of playing African-American animated characters.
Sure.
Mike Henry famously gave up the Cleveland Show. I don't know him, but he seems like a nice fellow.
And again, another nice guy. We're going to see
again. Understood.
No, truly talented.
And then Jenny Slate did the same thing. She voiced Missy on Big Mouth, and they actually wrote it into the storyline. And what I didn't understand was I didn't understand how that had a role in animation, given that Mark Hamill and Kevin Michael Richardson both played the Joker. And what race do you have to be Darkseid? And I didn't understand how relevant it was. And to be honest with you, Fred, I didn't know that you were white. I didn't look at YouTube videos of you, and I didn't know if you were black or white.
Wait a minute. Who told you? No, I don't. Yeah, but
it's funny.
Right. No, but right.
But
no,
but it's but it's real. And it's something that's in animation. Now, we've talked on the podcast about the idea that if the subject, you know, is the Boondocks, you know, it's something that should be voiced by the matching race, for lack of a better phrase.
Sure.
But the reality is that, like, I don't want to live in a world where Phil LaMarr can't be Samurai Jack.
Yeah.
So you see what I'm saying? So when you're seeing these roles, do you shy away from African-American roles? Well, is that something that would they shy away from you? Where do we go from here?
I will start by saying, you know, as a white heterosexual American male, my story has not been told, and I feel no. Here we got to do the real drum roll. Now, people, you know I'm kidding. Yeah, I always feel stupid talking about this stuff. He's like, well, see, as a white guy, you know, as a white male, I feel, you know, we really need to have her. That's the hard part. Actually, you're bringing it up is. Sadly, it's not my argument. You know, like I can't, like my thing has always been from the very get-go, a larynx doesn't have a color. Like I always felt that everybody should be able to play everything if they're qualified to play it. But my buddy Phil Lamar is very up on it. And he knows, like, he's got a tremendously good insight. And what he brought up to you, I think, was, you know, if you're making fun of a character, you know, you shouldn't like this. You're not going to, I'm not to play a guy who's going to make fun of a black person, but I wouldn't want to do that in the first place. You know what I mean? Like to me, it's just playing somebody's tonality and playing an actual person and their ethnicity happens to be one thing or the other. Then I felt that that was licensed for Kevin Michael Richardson to play, you know, a white guy, James Earl Jones playing a white Sith Lord called Darth Vader. You know what I mean? And you know, you can't hear that any other voice.
Right.
And it goes on and on from there. But I
right. I pity the guy who has to replace, like, eventually James Earl Jones is going to have to stop and Darth Vader's not going anywhere.
He will live on. But the thing is it's just I understand. First of all, you know, if you're going to be stereotypical or derogatory, no, you can't do that. And that I understand. Sometimes it's difficult to know when that is. For example, Mike Henry, for example, I really applaud his you know, his choice and what have you. But, you know, is Cleveland making fun? I don't know. You know, he's just Cleveland Brown to me. Like, I don't find him one way or the other, offensive or non-offensive. I find him just Cleveland Brown. But I get that there is a lot of tension with that where for example, for a while, or here's the business side of it, is that if a white guys can play everybody, but black guys can only play the black guys. Or, you know, it worked only when everybody was playing everybody and everybody had work. You know, if you're an Asian American, you don't have to just play the Asian guys. Yes, you should be able to do that for authenticity. But for example, I feel that then why not have an Asian guy play Captain Kirk if he's right, you know, vocally. Right. I mean, why?
Just the idea, though, that animation is this other world and mm-hmm. that, you know, going forward, I'm always fascinated by who can be casted at what things. Like, does a white guy have to be Bruce Wayne?
That's right. See, I don't feel that way. Unless I'm a real direct voice match, or let's say I'm playing Barack Obama. You know, a lot of people know that Barack Obama is African American, but he's also white. You know, I mean, you want to get technical with it. Right. I think you can go one way, but not the other. It's right now we're kind of like trying to balance it out and say, like, look, if we do have a Hispanic character, let's get a real Hispanic person to play it. That's right. Authentic, and that I totally agree with. You know, It's when you're trying to do voice matches or trying to play different things and you wonder, like, is this now they're just trying to, like, keep it clean, which I totally understand and respect. I've had to play a lot of different – I've played almost every ethnicity at one time or other. And a lot of it growing up in L.A. and I'm more familiar with certain things. Whereas right now I'm
also were born in New York, right?
Yes, New York and then L.A. And I'm more qualified to play people that I've not been to Scotland or Russia. But I play more Russians than you can imagine. Because I could probably play that on camera. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So people you played Red Dawn, right?
A lot of, yes. Like, but tons of Russians, you know. And I have Russian friends I have to call and say, did I say this right? Did I do this right? But that's a dialect thing.
You want to laugh at something. I just found out that when the announcers do the Euros for soccer, you know, football out in Europe, when they're doing a country, they have to realize that their audience is from that country. So if you mispronounce a name, you get that you're like offending people.
Yeah.
So this host said to one of the announcers, Ian Dark, he said, "How do you do it?" And he says, "I play a lot of FIFA, the video game."
Good.
Because they get it right.
Right. Yeah, they have to. Yeah,
have
yeah.
To.
It's very funny. I had
and
to
they
announce
re-record
for,
it. Yeah.
I had to announce for some, you know, some ice skating things, and it was like trying to get the French, the proper sure. Canadian, French Canadian, you know. Yeah, you want to get it right.
Well, pronunciations are a big deal. I worked the two of the more recent Olympics. I worked 2018 Pyeongchang and 2016 Rio. And the rule at Westwood One when you work the Olympics was you don't guess.
No.
Like, do not, even if it's Smith, don't guess.
No.
Check.
Smythe.
Make, yeah. Right. You never know. And you can't get it wrong. And it was one of those things where doing that had that high standard, and I loved it. Like I loved it because now every time I asked you right in the beginning, I said, "How do we pronounce your name?" And it's one of those things where even if I thought I knew, I like to double check. And I think that more people should do that.
Oh, I mean, the only guy who pronounced my name correctly was William Shatner. At the Annie's, because he did the Italian. He goes, "No, his name should be Fred Tatasciore." And I got on stage and went, "Okay, first of all, sabotage this, everybody. He's the only guy that pronounced my name like the real traditional way." I was so impressed.
That's
with
awesome.
William Shatner. Just way, way kudos to that guy. Going back to the thing is, yeah, the big argument or the bigger inference to this whole thing is that, and what I see them doing now more is having more and more main characters of color and more people of more opportunities for women and everybody to play, play themselves or play, you know, play that out. And so
if I saw correctly, and this is more for our audience, the TV show Supergirl casted Mecaud Brooks as James Olsen, Jimmy Olsen.
Uh-huh.
And now in the new Superman animated for HBO Max, Jimmy Olsen is African-American.
Right.
And so maybe that's changed. Like maybe that's forever changed. And you never know.
I see, that makes me happy. Like the idea that you can just kind of like open
right.
it up.
I don't know who's voicing. I don't know who the voice actor is. Again, that to right. me is less relevant than the way the character's drawn. That uh-huh. he's not the red, the orange haired. Let's do some quick rapid fire. I have to ask you about What If. That is all the rage now. These are becoming little mini events.
Yeah.
A, what was it like working on it? But B, what have you seen from it? And it's very different animation, and it's trying to be very realistic. And some of the actors are from the movies. It's a really wild conglomeration.
It's so trippy. I have no idea what to make of it other than that it's hilarious. It was so much fun to do. It was.
I always play Volstagg.
Yeah, I always play. I play Volstagg a lot. Yeah, different. I mean, I love the film versions of what these guys are. I mean, Bautista. All I'm doing is, you know, his
imitating. Yeah.
Him. He's phenomenal. And then you know, David Soboloff does it in the TV show brilliantly. Drax always makes me laugh, and so I just. But again, I'm doing that voice. You know, here. Being out here and saying, "You must feel pretty stupid," you know, like. But I love the style. It's just insane. I didn't realize it was such a big thing, quite honestly, when I got involved with it. I now know what the deal is, but I just love the excitement around it, and it's just been a real honor to be part of that. It really has.
And then we'll have you back. But we talked about Injustice, which is coming out. But also, the trailer was released for Hitmonkey.
Yes.
What the hell is that?
Do you know how we were talking about, I mean, you know, Hit Monkey is this Marvel character that's a hitman, that's a monkey.
They are literally scraping, like there's no character unanimated or
I know.
They are not leaving any stone unturned.
This thing is amazing because, again, you know, we're talking about creatures and having to have them say something, but as the creature, and then it has to make sense and do that. Yeah. So I'm trying to make it as realistic as possible as the actual creature. But you know, it's got to have some content and subtext to it. And it looks crazy. I mean, it's a really edgy thing. I mean,
that's
the
cool.
Character really, the comic books are edgy.
Yeah. Yeah.
They are. They're really, really different. The first time I heard about it, the booth director actually had introduced it to me, Scott Forbes. I was laughing. I was like, this is amazing. This is all many years ago, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just thought, wow, what a treat to be part of this thing. It's pretty cinema. I don't want to say cinema verite, but like really, it's definitely on the darker side of things.
That's cool.
It's funny, but it's
and was recorded with the same microphone that you've done this podcast with.
Yes, later. When I first started, no, it was at another place. But yes, but I recorded a lot of The Mandalorian on this, and a lot of
wait, what are you in the
Family Guy?
What are you in the Mandalorian? What are you in the Mandalorian?
Oh, aliens and stormtroopers and, you know, the funniest thing. What's weird is the funniest part of that recording is when we all had to be because we're doing the traditional stormtroopers, you know, for that, you
yes,
know,
yes.
Close the blast doors, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like,
yeah.
What's hilarious is all of us doing sand people, Tusken Raiders.
Oh,
it's like
nice.
One of the hardest. Loudest, you know,
and,
yeah, like, you know, it's like that was the craziest in Jawas and all that stuff. All the stuff
we thought those were clipped from the original films.
Well, I'm sure that there's design elements that were all everything.
That's
you know, but there's too many specific things happening that they're doing,
so
you know.
And it's such a brilliant show.
It was so much fun.
Fred, how can people find you? Social media, what's your story with that?
Oh, yeah, I'm trying to get better at the social media thing, but my Instagram's my name, Fred Tatasciore, FredTatasciore. Same with Twitter. And just drop me a...
Your drug of choice, though, is Instagram over Twitter?
No, there's no drug of choice. If Facebook, too, is all my name. Just try find me out and you know, I've got to get better at it. Now that I'm back in town more permanently, my goal this rest of this year is to get all the missing parts and go, okay, answer stuff. You know, so
well, I will say to anyone who had an issue with anything that we discussed in this podcast, do me a favor, find Fred out on social media and reach out to him directly and leave me the hell out of it.
And write letters to Seth.
Yeah.
S-E-T.
No,
come on. We
no, seriously, man, this was a blast. Thank you for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure.
Come back when more of your stuff comes out and just continued success, sir.
But thank you. Back at you. Wonderful show. Thank you so much. What an honor.
That is Fred Tatasciore right here on the Hall of Justice. Animation royalty. How about that? Coming up in October, The Many Saints of Newark. We're going to be reviewing. We're going to be reviewing What If. Also, Ted Lasso, Venom 2, much, much more. Thank you for listening. This is the Hall of Justice. We'll see you next week.